Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
The end is in sight, Taoiseach Micheál Martin said last night as he announced the government's new Path Ahead plan, and vaccines will chart that path for us, with more than 80,000 adults set, 80% of adults rather, set to receive the first dose by the end of June, and 60% of the population fully inoculated by the end of that month. Well, we'll have political reaction to the plan in just a few minutes, but first I'm joined by Paul Moyna, Professor of Immunology at Maynooth University. Aoife McLysett is Professor of Genetics at Trinity College Dublin and member of the Independent Science Advocacy Group. And Darren McCaffrey, political editor at Euronews. Good morning to you all. And Darren, I'm going to start with you because some complicated news coming from AstraZeneca. So they said yesterday they'd only be supplying around 50% of what they had promised the EU for quarter two of this year. The government here said that they'd factored that into this new plan, but AstraZeneca is saying they are still aiming to meet their original contract terms. So what are the numbers involved here?
Yeah, really confusing, isn't it? And actually, I have to say, those initial reports yesterday came via the EU, via Reuters, that they weren't going to deliver the entire batch of vaccines in the second quarter. They were initially due to provide 180 million doses, essentially in Q2. There were reports that was going to be as low as 90 million. And as you say, to add to the confusion, the Irish government last night stated that they had heard the same and had factored that into their vaccination programme. But late last night, AstraZeneca issued a statement in which they said no, they fully intended to provide those 180 million doses to the EU in that second quarter. And that actually, I think this is maybe clear where the confusion came from, is that they will rely on their global supply, so supplies of vaccines outside the EU, maybe from the UK, maybe from the US, to help make up the shortage that is likely to come from the plants inside the EU.
Okay, just Darren, we have a statement from AstraZeneca here too. It confirms today that its most recent Q2 forecast for the delivery of its COVID-19 vaccine aims to deliver in line with its contract with the European Commission. As per this contract, approximately half of the expected volume is due to come from the EU supply chain, while the remainder would come from its international supply network. The statement goes on, at this stage, AstraZeneca is working to increase productivity in its EU supply chain and to continue to make use of its global capacity, which is what you were just saying there, Darren, in order to achieve delivery of the 180 million doses to the EU in the second quarter. So when it comes to what the EU is expecting in Q2, 90 million will come from the EU factories, the rest will come from elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that's my understanding of it as well. And I think that's maybe potentially where the confusion came at late last night. But, you know, this is only part of a clearly what has turned into a pretty bitter dispute with AstraZeneca. We know what happened a couple of weeks ago when, of course, they announced that they wouldn't be able to provide only a quarter, I think, of the initial vaccines in Q1. And that led to a very public spat with the European Union and to the entire riot that almost led to the evoking of Article 16. But also in addition to that, you have to remember, in many parts of Europe, and it's been reported in Brussels today, the take-up of AstraZeneca, it simply isn't at the levels that member states would want. For example, here in Belgium today, the Brussels health inspector had said that of the 11,000 healthcare workers who'd been invited to appear to take up a vaccine, only 25% had done so, Claire. And one of the reasons they give for people not turning up is because they didn't want the AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, that follows comments clearly that were made by Emmanuel Macron and Ursula von der Leyen about its efficacy, particularly in older people, which is since with evidence out of Scotland being disproven. But clearly, it's not just about a supply issue in many member states. There is lots of anecdotal evidence that people are turning down this vaccine, that they don't want it because they don't think it's effective enough, which is not true.
Mm. Coming back then to the Irish situation, Darren, all news is local. This goes against the news, this supply news today from AstraZeneca of a 50% reduction. And we know that the government's plan had factored in the 50% reduction. So roughly how many more doses could Ireland be looking at getting because of this news today?
Well, so it's clearly on a per capita basis in terms of the vaccine rollouts. I have to say, I don't know the precise Irish figures in terms of how many they would be expecting in addition to this. But clearly, I would have thought if they have factored in that they only expected half, that they will get double that. So that is good news that those vaccines are available.
Well, our rough calculations here would suggest that this could mean about 900,000 extra jabs here.
Yeah, I think I did see someone, I think, remark on that. So that sounds about right. What is also interesting, and I'm not, again, entirely sure, you say all news is local, so I don't know what the particular situation in Ireland is, but what some member states have done and why actually the vaccination process, and this is why it's not a uniform picture across the EU, some member states are doing well, like Denmark, for example, is they have actually bought up extra doses of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine inside the EU's procurement program. So certain member states who don't want vaccines, you can go ahead and purchase those additional vaccines inside the EU's procurement program. And that means that they have actually set as the end of June when they think they'll be able to offer everyone a vaccination, and that they're hoping later on in the coming weeks to be able to vaccinate 100,000 people a day. So aside from the supply issue, it must be remembered that certain member states have actually been able to operate inside the EU systems by buying up surplus vaccines that member states don't want to help boost their vaccination process in their own countries. That's, I don't know whether that's been explored in Ireland or not.
It's very interesting for us.
But because, I would have thought it's an option.
Yeah, so, I mean, some have been saying that that's, you know, we should have been looking at the Sputnik, for example. But if you're saying that we can buy up supplies without upsetting the EU programme, that would be even more attractive, surely.
Yeah, yeah. And as I say, this is supplies that essentially member states have already stated they don't really want. You have to remember, you know, that there is a big divergence in terms of the vaccination program and how it's proceeding at this stage. Okay. You've got countries like, for example, Malta on 8%. Bulgaria is only vaccinated just over 1%. So I think that would be open to the Irish government. I'm not entirely sure whether it's something they have explored or not.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Darren, for joining us on the programme. And as I said, we have Professor Paul Moynagh and Professor Aoife McLeish with us too, and you're both very welcome to the programme. Paul, I come to you first. I mean, that news from AstraZeneca, if we were able to get, and we reckon it's around 900,000 extra in quarter two, that would be a big boost, surely.
That'd certainly be a big boost and really, really good news. I know obviously there's confusion, and it would be good to get clarification on that, but certainly there's a situation where we could get access to an additional almost a million doses of the AstraZeneca. That would be really, really positive. I think another factor as well, and was alluded to there, in terms of there may have been some concern initially in terms of the efficacy of the AstraZeneca because of lack of data in the phase 3 trials with respect to the over 70s. But again, you know, data coming out in the last couple of days from England and especially Scotland has shown that this is very efficacious, you know, in like with the over 80s. It gives after about 4 weeks with one dose. Gives about 80%, at least 80% protection from hospitalisation. So I think in terms of NIAC and the government, I think there's certainly, you know, potential there to look and to look at the strategy now, because initially the intention was to use AstraZeneca for the over 70s with the intention of being able to vaccinate that cohort by the end of March. Now that has been delayed until May because we have to obviously administer the Pfizer and Moderna, which provides more challenges. So now is the situation, if that is efficacious in this age group, you know, I certainly think it's worthy of discussion if the AstraZeneca should be looked at again in terms of being used to vaccinate those vulnerable cohorts and older cohorts as quickly as possible. Okay. And I think that would be really, really important.
So look again, Aoife, is what Paul is saying, and good morning to you. Look again at using AstraZeneca for the older cohort. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. I think we've been very lucky in the last year that we've got a choice of very good vaccines available. And I think that's really, really good news. And that's something that I think everybody takes great comfort in. And I'm not a doctor, so I don't give medical advice. But anybody in my family, I've told them, you know, take anything you're offered enthusiastically.
There are warnings, as, again, in the plan, and we want to talk about the plan in detail because it hinges a lot on the vaccine rollout. But Fergal Bowers and others have highlighted the concerns about next winter. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell us, both of you, if you will, and Aoife, you might start us on this, why there are concerns about what might happen next winter despite the vaccine rollout?
Well, it's written in the government document. They say that next winter we could still be dealing with this, and if fed up with the restrictions, then there you might expect less adherence to the restrictions. So that's what they're talking there. And I suppose what they're saying is that this current plan isn't really going to get the numbers locked down sufficiently to be able to relax the restrictions, which is, I think, quite bleak for most people to think about. The way I see it, there's more that we could be doing at the moment to get the numbers right down and then to protect those gains. And the idea of mandatory hotel quarantine is one of those things. We saw this, that it was very...
Okay, I think Aoife's line is letting us down a little bit. Paul, I'll come back to you on that. I mean, when we see that note about next winter, is the message there that we're looking at a constant level of this disease in the community?
Yeah, I think the reality is clear that we're likely to see this virus becoming an endemic virus. Like many other respiratory viruses, I think it's going to be very difficult to eliminate or eradicate it. And I think most people would tend to agree with that now. So
when you say endemic, will you just explain that to me really clearly? Like, what give us an example of an endemic virus?
So basically, an endemic virus, like many of the other respiratory viruses that we live with, for example, flu, various other, like we have tens of respiratory viruses that coexists with us. And they stay there at a constant level. And then at certain times of the year, especially if it shows seasonality, you see outbreaks like we do with the cold and the flu outbreaks during the winter months. So I think we're probably looking at a situation where even with vaccination, I think vaccination will still struggle to eradicate the virus. So we're looking at a situation where the virus becomes endemic. We live with that. And then at certain times of the year, you know, we get outbreaks. However, because most of us will have been vaccinated, with that vaccination, okay, it may not protect us fully from infection, but certainly it should protect us from getting very seriously ill. So again, it will probably resemble something like flu, where unfortunately some people will continue to get sick from it. There will be some deaths from it, but that's sort of the nature of a number of infections. So I think that's the reference. But I think, again, with the vaccination is a major tool. We have that in terms of reducing the impact of any of these seasonal outbreaks.
Now, I was talking to Darren about supply and how we might go about ramping that up. And he was talking about this buying up programme within the EU vaccine programme. But you like the cut of the Sputnik's jib?
Well, the data looks very good. Now, but again, Claire, I would say if we look at the, for example, the AstraZeneca, Pfizer, that have already been through the EMA regulatory process, the European Medicines Agency process, and if that is available and there's excess or ones that aren't being taken up by some of the EU countries, certainly I think that's where we should be looking at immediately, because one of the things I think we should be looking at is see how can we be most effective in a very acute time frame to protect those most vulnerable. And I think certainly we should be looking at that. I think the intention is that the Sputnik V will be put through for EMA approval, which is unusual because traditionally most medicines developed in Russia probably wouldn't have been submitted for approval through the EMA. But certainly the data from that, Claire, looks very good.
What can you tell us about this Californian variant, which we first heard about last night? Tomás Ryan mentioned it on Primetime. I've seen a few articles floating around about it this morning. Should we be concerned?
Yeah, I just think we need to be careful, Claire, because, again, I've seen it now. I've seen it reported in a media and newspaper online. But, again, we're waiting for the data, and that hasn't even appeared as a preprint yet. So there are many, many variants around. And, again, I think there's a lot of, you know, concern and, you know, about these variants and they being able to bypass vaccines. There is a possibility, and certainly in cases some of the variants, maybe the vaccines aren't as effective, but they still work really, really well. So, again, they may be susceptible, may be able to bypass the ability of the vaccine to protect against infection. But so far, I don't think a line has been crossed in terms of, I'd get really concerned if you had a situation if somebody who's vaccinated or somebody who's previously infected ends up severely ill with one of these variants. And to my knowledge, that hasn't happened so far because our immune system is more complex and more sophisticated than just producing neutralizing antibodies.
Okay,
and some of these variants may be able to bypass. So again, I think we need to be cautious of this and avoid this sense of, I almost sense at times, you know, vaccines have been, we're getting really concerned in terms of their efficacy. We've ended up being really, really fortunate. We have a number of vaccines that are really working really, really efficiently. And even with the variants, they still work really, really well. That if we had a vaccine that worked as well with flu, for example, we'd be delighted. So I think we need to be positive about that as well.
Well, what about the Brazilian variant in that context? Because we know that in the Manaus region, a very high proportion, 75% of the population previously had COVID. And a lot of people got very sick in the second wave because of that mutation.
Yeah, so again, but we don't know if that is the reason, Claire. So again, you'd have to see if it's a situation where that is actually due to the variant. And again, in terms of the serological studies there, in terms of, you know, how accurate they were, that would be very surprising to me if you had that level of immunity within the population that, again, a variant could completely bypass that immunity. So again, that would surprise me.
So they may have overestimated the number of people who were infected the first time around.
Well, possibly that's one explanation. But certainly we do know that with some of the variants, so when we generate an immune response, we produce neutralizing antibodies. With some of the variants, we need to produce more of the neutralizing antibodies to produce an effect. But then we've also got another layer of immunity, cell-mediated immunity, that, again, is that really good protective factor that stops us from getting sick.
Okay, Aoife McLeisett is back with us again. We got you back on a different line. Aoife, I just want to talk to you about the plan. What did you make of the plan? It is heavily reliant on the vaccine rollout.
It is, yeah. No, I think there were positive aspects in there. I thought it was encouraging to see that the government was saying, they have a line that they, we've learned it's extremely difficult to maintain this at moderate levels, which I think is kind of admitting that the idea of, you know, the previous idea and the attempted reopening it in December, they've learned from that. They are relying on the vaccine. I would personally like to see more about how do we reopen, how do we come out of lockdown. I'd really like to see something about local relaxation of restrictions. For example, Kerry is currently doing the best in the country. Dublin is the worst by quite a bit. Do we make the people in Kerry wait until we solve everything in Dublin? I wouldn't think so. And, you know, so I think we should have a regional approach as well to reopening. But, you know, they're talking about relying on the data and the Taoiseach and the Tonnage. They were, you know, they're looking at the trends and they're looking at their metrics to do the state of the pandemic in the country. But they only mentioned dates. They didn't mention any target metrics. And it'd be interesting to know what they are aiming for and, you know, how do we get out of restrictions. Okay. So I think people need to hear that.
Okay, we'll have political reaction to this after the break. But for now, Professor McLeisett and Professor Paul Moynihan, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.